Hello and welcome to HN Pod. Today is September 22nd, 2025, and this is episode number 162.
We've got a great lineup from the front page of Hacker News today. First up, Cloudflare is making some interesting moves, sponsoring a brand new browser project and a Linux distribution for developers.
Then, a headline that really makes you stop and think. OpenAI and NVIDIA are partnering on a project that will consume 10 gigawatts of power. We'll get into what that actually means.
Also from the Cloudflare camp, a new open source project called Cap'n Web, which is a new take on RPC for the web. And we'll be diving into a perennial Hacker News question. Why haven't local-first apps really taken off?
And finally, a big new open model release from Alibaba's Qwen team. It's called Qwen 3 Omni, and it's a native multi-model model that handles text, images, audio, and video. So, a lot to get through. Let's jump in.
All right. First up, Cloudflare is sponsoring Ladybird and Omarki. This one got a lot of attention, sitting at 577 points. Cloudflare announced they're backing two independent open source projects. The first is Ladybird, which is an ambitious attempt to build a new web browser, including the rendering and JavaScript engines, completely from scratch.
And that's the key part, right? It's not another Chromium fork. They're building LibWeb and LibJS from the ground up. The stated goal is to challenge the browser monoculture, which is overwhelmingly dominated by Google's Chromium engine.
Exactly. And the other project is Omarki, which is described as an opinionated Arch Linux setup for developers. This one is actually created by David Heinemeier Hansson, or DHH, the creator of Ruby on Rails. So two projects aimed at increasing choice and diversity for both users and developers.
The comments on this were fascinating. The top comment from user Ofraha immediately brings up the skepticism. They say, Cloudflare clearly wants to move us to a future where only approved browsers are allowed to access the web, referring to things like web environment integrity. So they ask, what's the play here? Is this just for goodwill?
It's a fair question, and one that's always on the mind of the HN crowd. But the reply from Vulcan01 offers a really compelling analogy. They say it's the same reason Valve invests in Proton for Linux gaming. Right now, the major browser engines are controlled by Google and Apple. Cloudflare is a massive player on the web, but they're dependent on these platforms they have zero influence over.
So it's a hedge. They're reducing their dependency on potential competitors. If Google decides to make a change to Chromium that hurts Cloudflare's business, having a healthy, independent alternative like Ladybird, even if it's small, is strategically valuable. It's about preventing a single company from having total control over the client side of the web.
Yeah, and another commenter, Cosmic Cheese, points out that Apple's control is pretty precarious. If regulators force Apple to allow other browser engines on iOS globally, Google could push Chrome hard, and Safari's market share could plummet, leaving Google in an even more dominant position. So backing a new engine makes a ton of sense from that perspective.
It seems like a smart, albeit long-term bet. And for Omarki, the connection is a bit more direct. DHH notes in the article that Cloudflare support helps them with fast ISO and package delivery, using Cloudflare CDN and R2 storage. So a mix of strategic hedging and practical support. Overall, a positive move for the open web, even if you're a bit cynical about the corporate motivations.
Absolutely. Let's move on to our next story, which is a real eye-opener. The headline is, OpenAI and NVIDIA announce partnership to deploy 10 gigawatts of NVIDIA systems. That's 10 gigawatts.
The number is just staggering, and the top comment immediately puts it into perspective. User Computer Guru notes that 10 gigawatts is roughly the combined power usage of Chicago and New York City. That's not just a lot of power for a data center. It's a city-scale amount of power.
And this gets to the heart of the discussion on Hacker News. The question isn't just, wow, that's a lot of GPUs. It's, where is this power going to come from, and who is going to pay for it? The commenter points out that residential electricity prices in the US have already jumped 46% in the last 5 years, partly because of the massive power draw from new data centers.
Right. The concern is that regular consumers are shouldering the cost of grid upgrades and increased demand, while the tech giants get to keep paying relatively low rates for electricity. It's a classic case of privatized profits and socialized costs.
A reply from Elbasti, who says they work in the data center space, adds some great context. They mention that power consumption is the canonical way to describe a data center's size. You can upgrade the computers every few years, but the power infrastructure is basically locked in. A 200-megawatt data center will always be a 200-megawatt data center.
I loved their phrasing. They said, the fact that we use this unit really nails the fact that AI is basically refining energy. You're taking raw electricity and turning it into intelligence, or at least what looks like intelligence. It's a very resource-intensive process.
And that ties into another comment about TSMC's upcoming N2 chip node. The big deal with N2 isn't just a small density increase, but a huge drop in energy consumption, 36% less energy for the same speed. This shows that the entire industry, from the chip fabs up to the data center builders, is now hyper-focused on efficiency. Power is the new bottleneck.
So this announcement is really a sign of the times. The flex is no longer just about how many GPUs you have, but how many gigawatts you can command. And it's forcing a much-needed public conversation about the real-world infrastructure and energy costs of the AI boom.
Definitely. Okay, let's stick with Cloudflare for one more story. Cap'n'Wub, a new RPC system for browsers and web servers. This is a new open-source library from Kenton Varda, the creator of Cap'n Proto.
For anyone who isn't deep in this world, RPC stands for Remote Procedure Call. The goal is to make communicating with a server over a network feel just like calling a regular function in your code, hiding away all the messy details of HTTP requests and JSON formatting.
And Cap'n Web has some really neat features. It's pure TypeScript, has no schemas, and works over WebSockets or HTTP. But the really magical part, the thing that gets developers excited, is what they call promise pipelining.
Right. This means you can make a call to the server, and without waiting for the response, you can immediately use the result, which is still a promise, in a second call. The library is smart enough to bundle all of that up and send it to the server in a single network round trip. For complex interactions, that can be a massive performance improvement.
The comments, of course, went straight for the most mind-bending part of the implementation. User M. Trovo pointed out the section on how they handle array mapping, calling it fascinating and terrifying at the same time.
I had to read this part twice. To figure out what operations you want to perform on an array on the server, they actually run your mapping function once on the client with a special placeholder object. They record what you do to that placeholder, turn those actions into a set of instructions, and send that to the server to be replayed on the real data.
It's an incredibly clever hack to get around the fact that JavaScript doesn't have something like C# expression trees, which let you inspect code as data. The comments discuss this trade-off. You can't just send the JavaScript function to the server for security reasons, and parsing the function's source code into an AST is way too complex for a small library. So they came up with this record and replay trick.
Kenton Varda, the creator, actually jumped into the comments to explain some of these decisions, which is always great to see. He confirmed that parsing the AST was a non-starter for a library that aims to be under 10 kilobytes. It's a great example of pragmatic engineering, even if the solution feels a bit like black magic.
It's a very cool project. It feels like it's designed to solve the kinds of problems you run into when building complex, real-time applications on a platform like Cloudflare Workers. Definitely one for developers to keep an eye on.
Okay, let's switch gears from a specific solution to a broader problem. Why haven't local-first apps become popular? This is a think piece from Marco Bombini that really struck a chord, getting 251 points.
First, we should probably define local-first. This isn't just an app that has an offline mode. It's an application architecture where the primary copy of your data lives on your device. The cloud is just a place to sync and back up, not the source of truth. The dream is an app that's always fast and responsive, regardless of your internet connection.
The author argues that the main hurdle is complexity, especially when it comes to synchronizing data between multiple devices without conflicts. They point to CRDTs, or conflict-free replicated data types, as the technical solution. But the top comment from Crazy Gringo immediately pushes back, saying that designing a CRDT model that makes sense to users is not for the faint of heart and a gigantic, enormous headache.
And I think that gets to the core of it. The technical challenge is immense. But other comments pointed out that it's not just a technical problem, it's an economic one. A user named Exorvoid made a great point. We have well-established business models for SaaS apps. You pay a monthly fee for access. How do you convince people to pay a subscription for an app that works perfectly fine without your servers?
That's a huge challenge. And then there's the user experience side. Another comment pointed out that even apps that should work offline, like Google Docs or Spotify, often get stuck on flaky connections. They'll show a spinner trying to sync before letting you access your locally saved data. The only fix is often to turn on airplane mode to force it into offline mode.
So you have this trifecta of problems. The technology is incredibly complex, the business model is unproven, and the user experience on the dreaded flaky connection is often worse than a pure online-only app.
It's one of those ideas that sounds amazing in theory, and many developers are passionate about it. But the practical realities have so far prevented it from becoming mainstream. It's a hard problem on every level.
For sure. All right, let's close out with a big model release. Qwen 3.Omni, native Omni AI model for text, image, and video. This is from the Qwen team at Alibaba Cloud.
The key word here is Omni. This isn't just a text model. It's designed from the ground up to be truly multimodal. It can understand text, audio, images, and video as inputs, and it can generate text or even real-time speech as an output. The demos are pretty impressive, showing it doing things like describing a video or having a spoken conversation.
And unlike many recent releases, this is a new foundational model, not just a fine-tune. They're highlighting a novel architecture and state-of-the-art performance on a bunch of audio and video benchmarks.
The discussion on Hacker News was less about the specific benchmarks and more about the bigger picture. The top comment from Stateless captures the sentiment perfectly. The Chinese are going to end up owning the AI market if the American labs don't start competing on open weights.
Exactly. This is seen as another example of a high-quality, powerful model coming out of China that is, at least to some degree, open. And the replies to that comment are a perfect snapshot of the HN community. People are already talking about running it at home on their dual 3090 setups, integrating it with Home Assistant, and using ESP32 devices as voice satellites.
It's the hacker ethos in action. While the big labs are focused on API access and closed models, the open source community is grabbing these powerful tools and immediately putting them to use for personal, private AI. Someone mentioned they have Qwen 3 tied into their home automation, running on their gaming PC. That's the future many on HN are building for themselves.
There's also a geopolitical undercurrent to the conversation. Commenters are worried that the US government might eventually ban running these models, citing national security. One person recalled a senator proposing to add a previous Chinese model, DeepSeek, to the ITAR list, which would have made using it a crime.
So Qwen 3 Omni isn't just a tech release. It represents the growing competition in the AI space, the power of open models, and the desire of the tech community to own and control their own AI infrastructure, free from big corporate clouds. It's a really fascinating dynamic to watch.
Well, that's a wrap for today. We covered a lot, from Cloudflare's strategic bets on the open web to the city-sized power demands of AI, and the ongoing battle between open and closed ecosystems.
A lot of food for thought. Thanks for tuning in to HN Pod. That's all for episode 162. We'll be back tomorrow with more top stories from Hacker News.